The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
All righty now. We'll try again right here on the ParaX Radio Network. You have the Paranormal View. And we still have some hiccups, but we're going to work through those also. I have with us Kat Kloko, who's been absent for a while.
Happy Grandpa's Knot, everyone.
And I have Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello. We're hoping that Henry can recover the first part of the Henry show.
Yeah, we're going to try. But I also have, or don't have, I should say, Cece. We couldn't get her back on. I have no idea what was wrong with Skype with her. So we're going to go ahead and do the show. We'll have just a little over an hour left. We're not going to take any breaks.
Well, we just took a really long break.
Yeah,
we just did.
That was a 40-minute break.
Right. So I want everybody to see if you guys can hear Kat and Jeffrey now.
Jeff already said, Aussie Jeff already said, oh, my God, other voices.
Oh, good. All right. Okay, that's good then. At least other people can hear us. So tonight we're going to be talking about Krampus and other different types of holiday traditions and stuff, or some of it. So before we actually, Jeff talks about some of it, I'm going to start off with the thing that I have. Everyone is familiar with Santa Claus, that jolly old elf who makes his way from house to house on Christmas Eve to deliver toys to the goodly children of the world. Here in the USA, some may know of St. Nicholas' European heritage, but few are familiar with his dark companion, Krampus. In many Alpine European towns, the celebration of St. Nicholas Day would not be the same without a celebration on its eve, December 5th, honoring this dark servant. Originating in Germanic folklore as early as the 1600s, Krampus is believed to be a bestial creature who accompanies St. Nicholas on his earthly journey. While St. Nicholas rewards the good children with gifts and sweets, Krampus dispenses punishment to the wicked children who have strayed from the path of good. It is said he takes care of St. Nick's naughty list. Why, the mere sight of Krampus alone is enough to turn any wrongdoer toward more peaceful pursuits. The name Krampus is derived from the old High German word for claw. This towering 7-foot tall hairy creature is depicted as having bulging eyes, a whip-like tongue, pointed ears, and horns atop his head. He carries a pitchfork, or more traditionally, a bundle of birch switches, to menace children as he travels through town on a pair of mischief feet. One cloven hoof, and other a bear-like claw. Wayward children caught by Krampus are spanked, whipped, and even shackled to be spirited away in either a basket or barrel to Krampus's lair. Once there, they receive further punishment until they are repentant. Krampus festivals throughout Alpine communities kick off the holiday season with townspeople dressing in Krampus costumes, running rampant through the streets and putting a scare in the youngsters. After the children have been given a proper fright to ensure they stay on the straight and narrow, the rowdy Krampus are rewarded with holiday spirits, traditionally beer and schnapps. In fact, Krampus celebrations have become so popular that they can last for days before the arrival of St. Nicholas on December 6th. So now you know Krampus is on the way. And I believe today is Krampus's day, or is that tomorrow?
No, that's Krampus today.
Night. It's today?
It's Krampus night.
Technically, it's tomorrow on the 6th, but most places are, they schedule their stuff around, the dates or the weekends to be convenient. So, in fact, there's a Krampus Night happening right now, tonight, in L.A.
Krampus Night's the night before St. Nick's Day.
Oh, so it would be evening.
It's tonight. It's always going to be December 5th, because St. Nick's Day is the 6th.
Yes.
It's just tonight, our show happened to fall onto Krampus Night. Yeah. So I'm like, yes, I'm doing my little happy dance.
Well, doing your happy dance.
Well, they also, as he was saying, they have the Krampus run, the Krampuslauf. They're having one of those in downtown Los Angeles on December 10th. And And then on the 12th, they're having Krampus at Alpine Village, which is in Torrance. And
yeah. That's on
12th.
Yeah. I'm looking at the schedule events. Jeff, do you want to read where they're doing all the events tonight?
And I just can't. The one in Highland Park tonight is sold out. I know. I went to their website. I guess the Krampus run in at 634 South Spring Street in downtown LA. I think that's more of a being a Krampus Lauf. That's more of a parade, I would guess. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's tickets involved. Right. The Krampus at Alpine Village is. I didn't get both. I'm getting a URL for that. That is at 833 West Torrance Boulevard in Torrance, 90502. And in Pasadena on the 13th, they're having at the Church of the Angels at 1100 Avenue 64, Pasadena, California. They're having traditional Krampus play and Krampus films. And I'm wondering there have been Krampus movies made. I mean, a friend of mine worked on a Krampus short, which I saw, and it wasn't what I expected. It was essentially two talking heads of a older man and wife, and he complains about the fact that when he was a child, Krampus came, and he was really terrified of Krampus, and it implied that Krampus shows up, but we never see him. So I'm like, times have changed where they're like, oh, it's scarier to use your imagination. It's like, no, you kind of – Krampus is not something we don't know. We know what Krampus looks like. And so that was a little disappointing. So I'd been looking forward to Michael Dougherty's feature film, which has been released as of yesterday. But they started showing it Thursday night. So after I went to the Rift Tracks – it's Universal City Walk. They had 11 p.m. Showing of Krampus, which I went and saw, and I liked it. It had a few kind of an odd ending. I understood the ending, but I had to really think about it. And some of Krampus's design, I had a little bit of an issue because, like I say, Krampus is really well known. Mm-hmm. And here, even though, we had the tongue, it seemed more like a skeletal face with lockjaw. I mean, his mouth wouldn't move. And it just stayed frozen open, and at one point the tongue came out. And I'm thinking, come on, Mike. You did trick-or-treat, and you're doing trick-or-treat too. We know you can do better. But story-wise, it was great. It was a lot. It was a horror comedy. It's something that, Cat and Henry won't have nightmares over. It's more comedy than not. But it indicates that he's able to – I don't know how into the legend this is or whether it was just for the movie. But it implies that he's able to animate Christmassy things into demonic entities. So like gingerbread men come to life and attack people and things like that. But Adam Scott, Tony Collette are in it, David Kochner, and Conchita Farrell from the Two and a Half Men is in it. And it's a really well done film because there are characters that are just as likable enough, sort of like from National Lampoon's Vacation or Christmas Vacation, that you're like, yeah, okay, that one can die. You don't mind who's expendable, such like that. But I thought it was very well done.
Cool. I'm never going to go see it.
Why?
I really hate, anything. Even, I can't even watch Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead is hilarious.
I can't watch it. And there was an anime, I can't remember the name of it right now. It's not High School of the Dead, but it has to do with zombies. And it's not even, I really wish I could remember it. It's basically the entire world, except for these four girls, has been killed or taken over by zombies. And one of the members is in such denial over that this happened that she imagines that all of her living counterparts are still there. So she talks to her teachers and everything like they're still there, but they're dead. They've become zombies. I couldn't even get through that. And it was a lighthearted show.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I can't do it. I can't do it. So,
but you still have to check out that Japanese quote horror unquote film House, which is just such a, you know, makes David Lynch look like, you know, Steven Spielberg in his kid days. I mean, it's just so bizarre and weird. It's nothing like, you know, a Grudge or Ring kind of movie. It was so weird that I said, I've got to listen to the audio commentary to find out what drugs they were taking to make this movie. And it turned out that they went to a bunch of little school children and say, what scares you? Mm-hmm. And they said this, this, and this. And so they essentially made these weird deaths part of these children ideas. And I'm like, okay, I can see a 5-year-old being scared of being eaten by a piano, but it was...
Well, it kind of reminds me of that moment in Home Alone where you have the oven or the boiler in the basement that flares up and it freaks the character Kevin out. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's something like that, but yeah. And oh, just as another add-on about other places around the states that are at least having... Krampus stuff going on. Asbury Park in New Jersey has the inaugural Krampus event tonight. Dallas, Texas has the Krampus Walk 2015. Austin, Texas has the Austin Krampuslauf Parade. Chicago, Illinois has the 3rd annual Krampus Knot. Charlotte, North Carolina, the NODA Krampus Crawl. Kitchener, oh, I guess it's Ontario. ON. I'm forgetting a state name, aren't I? That's Ontario, isn't it?
Ontario's in Canada.
Yeah. I know it's in Canada, Henry, but...
You don't know if it's...
So, yeah, it's not Eastern Ohio, West, so it's ON. So Krampus Run and Village, yeah, these are Canada. Edmonton, Canada, is Krampus Knot Celebration. Washington, D.C., the 4th annual Krampus Love. Orlando, Florida, the inaugural Krampus Party. In Norman, Oklahoma, the 2nd annual Krampus Lauf. So you have fun, all you kids at the University of Oklahoma.
Okay.
But you can find out more about this stuff visiting Krampus.com.
Let me see if Barbara can say anything now. Try your mic. Still nothing. I don't hear you.
Like a one syllable that was a twang.
Yeah. Oh.
You're sounding the way Jeff usually does. that's not good. you might just have to take and jump off, reboot, and let Sarge bring you back in.
Yeah.
Because when I had you on, it could have messed everything up then when Sarge tried to get you on. So,
yeah. There's a whole lot about Krampus, and he's become incredibly popular recently.
Yeah. She's trying.
She's trying.
Like she's coming out of one of those horror movies, cocoons or something.
She's trying to come out of the computer screen.
I'll tell you, when I saw the Ring, the American version of the Ring, it had a jump scare that I didn't see coming. And normally jump scares are so well telegraphed. They're like, here it comes, you know, and then you see it. And I'm like, didn't anyone else see that coming? Well, when she crawls out of the set, and mm-hmm. she stands there, and she sort of like fast forwards to the guy.
Yeah,
that sent me over the ceiling. That was a little bit much. That surprised me. I was very impressed with that.
That's interesting. I'm trying to remember if it was The Ring or The Grudge, the American versions, because they're so similar. And they
both... The Grudge has the closets and The Ring had the TVs.
Yeah, but I can't remember. I think this is The Grudge and the American version of The Grudge, because I've seen both the Japanese and American versions of those horror movies. And there is one point where I believe it's a ghost walks around and it doesn't have a lower jaw. So you just see her tongue hanging from her neck. And I was just like, I'm done.
And what,
I'm done
what,
now.
What creature is this?
I'm not sure which one that was.
Yeah, it was one of those. It was one of the two. And all I can remember was that it was a blonde chick starring. And I was just like...
It may have been The Ring then, because I think that was Naomi Watts was in there.
Yeah. So, yeah, at any rate, I was just like, I'm done. I don't know what they've done to this movie, but I'm done with it. I just turned off the TV. Walk to my bed, cry in a pillow, leave all the lights on. It's just...
Well,
the
movie Krampus is no scarier than a Doctor Who episode, in my opinion.
Oh. Yeah, that's either something really bad for the Krampus movie or...
No,
good for the Krampus movie,
yes.
Bad for Doctor Who.
No. It's very much a fun... It's kind of a romp.
Okay.
I mean, the trailer, of course, makes it look much scarier than it is. You know, but it also implies a lot of the humor that's involved.
Huh. So it's more like a cabin. Is it the cabin in the woods? Is that the horror comedy?
The horror comedy with the, yeah, they explain why cabin horror movies are made the way they are.
Yeah,
it's that kind of a comedy. But even that was had a few more jumps than this. But this one got, you know, it's more, I wouldn't even say it's unsettling. I mean, there are comedy horror films that can be really creepy and you're laughing at the same time saying, oh, please don't make me dream about this tonight. But yeah, it was a romp. I thought the film was most horror films nowadays are kind of a wink to the audience kind of thing anyway.
That's an interesting trend.
They got a question in the chat room. What's a loaning Christmas or a long Christmas? Oh, that's a long
Christmas.
Okay. I thought you said what? No, I see now what it's saying. I never heard of that before. A long Christmas.
Do you need new
I
glasses?
I have not had anything to drink yet.
No, do you need new glasses?
Yes, I do. These are kind of like got stuff all over them and stuff. I can't see half the time. Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so let's see, guys. We got a lot of stuff we can do. So we talked about the movie a little bit. We talked about the other Krampusnacht festivities going on. We've even gotten a brief history of what Krampus is. So I found an interesting take on it. It's a bit long, but it's from Visit Salzburg. And please, all of our German and Austrian speaking listeners, please be kind. My last name may be Kloko, but I cannot pronounce German words.
Really?
Yeah, no. Japanese is fine. Korean?
I tell you who can.
Moofy.
No, Moofy can.
Moofy can.
Moofy lived in Germany a long time.
Oh. And Moofy's not in chat, is she?
Yep, she sure is.
Yay, come on, scroll down. Oh, there she is. Yay. So she can yell at me whenever I pronounce something wrong. But it's a wonderful article about basically that Alpine pagan rituals that ended up creating Krampus and how he kind of got appropriated into the Saint Nick thing.
Cool.
Did I lose you guys?
Nope.
No. The next part of your sentence
So I got an interesting. It's from just the Visit Salzburg website, which is just visit-salzburg.net, and it's about its pagan heritage. And I love it because it has on the top just like this ugly, ugly Krampus-looking face from one of the wooden masks that they used during Krampusnacht. So I am putting the link into our chat room. So I can read it. It's a short article. Would you like me to read it?
Sure, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. In Salzburg, people always minded their ancient customs. Wow, I can't read now. And good old traditions, especially in the countless mountain villages spread all over Salzburg, which are difficult to access. Some of these quite old customs and traditions survive through the centuries until today. One of them is the original custom of Helfish. It's a Helfish custom of Perchten. So that's spelled P-E-R-C-H-T-E-N. Perchten.
Perchten's pretty close, yeah.
Yeah. So, according to old public opinion, plenty of ghosts and demons are going around during the long and cold nights in midwinter. In Salzburg, during this time of year, a deep-rooted belief in Perchten was overall widespread. The origins of this belief are probably documented in various Germanic traditions based on female divinity. In the view of our ancestors, Frau Perchta, or Miss Perchta, was a demonic creator, half-god, half-man, who appears at the end of the year and the beginning of the new year, accompanied by various evil figures. She watched over the people and protected them against bad demons and also metes out punishment. In the 16th century, her name was given also to the evil creatures accompanying her and her young athletic men, wrapped in the grim, fearsome, and awful mass, moved out from the house. Okay, sorry, this is an ongoing sentence. So the name Perchten also not only meant her, but also the demons and ghosts, and also the men who dressed up as these demons and ghosts during this particular time. During the 17th century and 18th century, the Catholic Church tried to ban the Perchten customs, but with little success. In the 19th century, Perchtenlauf, or the procession of Perchten through the villages, became popular again. During the centuries, Perchtenlauf took place all over the mountain dales of Salzburg, but although the customs are nowadays popular again, the original customs only survived in Gastein, Altenmark, and St. Johann. The wooden masks. The masks are made of wood and mostly have animal archetypes, wolf, bear, eagle, and so on. They have enormous fangs and tusks and various pairs of horns to spike several damned souls. In some mountain dales, like Gastein, they also have no ears, so they needn't hear the painful screams of their victims. The horse tail is also a symbol of Perchten. They are also used for punishment. The big bells they wear on their back, making sure I read that correctly, are very noisy and announce them from a distance. There's variations of Perchten. There are other customs in Salzburg and other predominantly mountain regions of Austria. One of the most known are the processions of Ugly Perchten, I'm going to just say the English version of that, who are described above, but there are also various customs of Beautiful Perchten. While the Beautiful Perchten have to ban demons and ghosts, the Ugly Perchten are responsible for banning mischief and bringing luck and wealth to the people. The best known of them are the Tresterer in the Pingsgau region, Schellnobel Perchten, and the Wild Chase around Urtersberg, and the custom of Glocker. And they also are wearing big masks based on symbols and animal archetypes. And according to our ancestors' belief, they bring light in dark season and promise a large crop, fortune, and blessings to the people. So now we know why Krampus was originated. He's one of these little demon guys that are supposed to bring light and large crops and everything back to the people the following year. Which I don't think has ever been actually explained in anything we've read about Krampus so far.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like he may have been derived almost from Pan, who was a forest fertility spirit.
Yeah, and that's and really... you just look at a photo or an illustration of him and you're like, yeah, he's a faun, basically.
Yeah. Or a satyr, yeah.
Satyr.
Let's see if Cece can talk now. No.
Nope.
No. Nope,
she's busy being assimilated by the Cybermen.
Oh, no.
I have no idea why hers all of a sudden isn't working. I mean, everybody else's was. Maybe it's something that mine's got her locked up on.
Maybe.
Yeah, it could be. Well, we'll get it worked out for next week, I know for sure.
Yeah.
So
eventually, Krampus follows Nicholas, St. Nicholas. And like we talked about earlier, December 5th is Krampus Night, and December 6th is St. Nicholas Day. So, and then we just go from there. Yay. Everyone sounds so excited. They're like,
yeah. I know. I think we're still taken aback at how weird this show has become.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is a very weird show. I'm trying to just troop through it. I'm like, okay, guys, we can do this. We can do this. So I also have the 9 legendary monsters of Christmas, which Krampus is one of them. And, Frau Perchit is back. She's another one that we just talked about. Or we have Who Travels with St. Nicholas. I have 2 articles. Wait, okay. I could share either one. Or both.
If you got 2, we got, let's see, we got another 45 minutes.
Okay.
Well, you also pointed out you found that there are holiday tree ornaments of Krampus now.
Yeah, before the show, even before we started recording Henry's one-man band, I actually found it because of something Jeff Belanger posted on Facebook earlier today. He posted a photo of him in this awesome Krampus sweater, which, by the way, I totally want to get one. But also, Fall River, Massachusetts has a Krampus tree somewhere, and he posted photos of it. And in this, quite predominantly in this Krampus tree, is this fantastic glass ornament of Krampus. And I need to find it on Amazon again. But you can buy it off of Amazon. It's a little over $20, I think. Which
22 and change, yeah.
It's It's a huge ornament, though.
I'll get the link into the chat room here. And I've got it. Yeah. It's going to be on the report page. There we go.
It's actually not a bad-looking ornament. There's also, I saw...
You know, it can stand on a shelf, too, if you don't have a tree.
Yeah. And yeah, there's
5.5 hangs on string.
Yeah. So if you have a tree and you want to put it on the tree, make sure it's on a really sturdy branch. Otherwise,
It's 25 bucks now. It was like 22 earlier.
No! Jeff Belanger, what have you done? No, I really doubt it has anything to do with him. But,
Yeah, we
there's also Sanitar. Did you see that?
What?
No.
There's a Sanitar. It's a Santa as a centaur.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, there's a set. I could buy these for myself for Christmas because they're so silly. But yeah, in the past 2 hours, the price has gone from 22 and changed to $24.98.
Oh, I found it. The accoutrement centaur ornament, $12.70.
Yeah.
That's not so bad.
Yeah. No, I like it. But yeah, the Krampus ornament's interesting. There are other ones on Amazon as well. But what I love about this one is that, one, it's a glass ornament, and 2, there is a kid stuffed on the huge sack that he's sitting on.
Yes. Yes.
And it's speaking over the top, like, help me! I'm not a naughty child, but help me! So yeah, that's the fun find, and we can thank.
Put Jeff that in the chat rooms. There we go. That's the Santa Centaur. Who decides? Hey, this would be something good to make.
I don't know, but it has a 4.8 out of 5 stars with 81% reporting 5 stars.
Okay, we have a question in the chat room.
Yeah,
Aussie Jeff.
Yeah.
He said, yay. Is there a history of the Krampus family, siblings, parents, etc.?
I think that has to do with, from what I just read, with Frau Perchit and her ghostly horde at New Year's. But I haven't found anything specifically about, like, a family or really any other origin story other than he was created by this pagan goddess.
Well, in the film, in the Krampus film, he has his own, like, dark elves that help.
Oh, really?
And like I say, he's able to, like, possess toys so that, like, there's, you know, killer, little killer teddy bears and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And so a little really Pop Goes the Weasel, a little Pop Goes the Weasel box you don't want to open.
Why? Because a real weasel comes out?
No, no. It's kind of vague. You have to really think about it. But this weird entity comes out and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Because when you see it, it's just a little box about the size of the Hellraiser box. And it pops open and the girl's looking at it and you start to see something slowly emerging. And she screams and that's all we see of it. And later we see it up in the attic and now it's massive and – when it's trying to crawl away, you can see that the music box, the little jack-in-the-box box is at the end of it. And I realized it's coming out like a giant slug or something.
Oh, so it's like the TARDIS.
Kind of, yeah. Or it's more like it has the seed and it's growing out of that kind of a thing. It's not – I don't think the actual box is transcendentally dimensional.
Oh, that's a shame. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
What could you stick in that box? Krampus himself? So they really made him into an evil Santa Claus type character.
Oh yeah, he is not a happy camper. And we don't see him full on, you know, you get the reveal, but you get a lot of the fact he's able to leap from house to house by way of the roofs. And because, hey, he's a goat, you know, he's got goat legs. So even though you see him from a distance, it's very well done. A little bit of nice comedy suspense, and and by the way, he can tunnel under snow, so don't think going through the snow is easy.
Oh, I got a message from our friend Tabby Cat.
Okay.
And she chimes in. She goes, "Hey, Cat, Krampus was also explained by some pagans as the ordinary person being allowed to let their animalistic tendencies to come out in order to be the opposite as Saint Nicholas."
Oh yes, there are a lot of the classic postcards of Krampus where he's dressed up except for his legs and seducing young women and women being very open to it. I guess what with that Gene guy from Kiss.
Oh, Simmons?
Yeah, Gene Simmons' tongue of his, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was, I was looking at the history of the different cards, just because they became really popular as stationery cards and greetings cards. Yeah. You Google them and you'll find them from all the way from 1840s up until present day. And there seems to be two peaks of the more, I'm going to say, sexualized Krampus. From like the 1880s to 1890s, and then in the 1960s again. Because there's a famous card of Krampus with a cute redhead playing chess from the 1960s. And I'm like, oh, that's a very interesting illustration there, guys. So I did find, this is from the 9 Legendary Monsters of Christmas. And I know Cece had found this, and it is a Christmas cat that will eat you.
Christmas yes. cat. Kept mentioning what?
It. We discussed that with. I was actually on Marla's show. We were discussing the Christmas cat. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to look that. I'm gonna have to find that now.
Yeah. So this is an Icelandic Yule cat, and it's called the Christmas cat or Jólakötturinn. I think is how you pronounce it, Jólakötturinn. And he is not a nice cat. He might eat you. In many Icelandic families, those who finished all their work on time received new clothes for Christmas. Those who were lazy and did not, although this is mainly a threat, to encourage children to work hard, their parents told the tale of the Yule Cat, saying that Jólakötturinn would tell who the lazy children were because they did not have at least one new item of clothing for Christmas, and that they would be sacrificed to the Yule Cat. This reminder tends to spur children into doing their chores. A poem written about the cat ends with a suggestion that children help out the needy so they too can have the protection of new clothing. It's no wonder that Icelanders put in more overtime at work than most Europeans.
I have the poem, by the way.
Yeah, I just found it. But
you would you like me to read it? I did it on Marla's show.
Yes, please.
Yeah, Henry's going to love this. You all know the Yule Cat, and that the cat was huge indeed. People didn't know where he came from or where he went. He opened his glaring eyes wide, the two of them glowing bright. It took a really brave man to look straight into them. His whiskers sharp as bristles, his back arched up high, and the claws of his hairy paws were a terrible sight. He gave a wave to his strong tail. He jumped and he clawed and he hissed. Sometimes up in the valley, sometimes down by the shore. He roamed at large, hungry and evil in the freezing Yule snow. In every home, people shuddered at his name. If one heard a pitiful meow, something evil would happen soon. Everyone knew he hunted men and didn't care for mice. He picked on the very poor that got no garment, that no new garments got, for Yule who toiled and lived in dire need. From them he took in one fell swoop their whole Yule dinner, always eating himself if he possibly could. Hence it was the women at their spinning wheels sat, spinning a colorful thread for a frock or a little sock. Because you mustn't let the cat get hold of the little children. They had to get something new to wear from the grown-ups each year, and when the lights came on Yule Eve and the cat peered in, the little children stood rosy and proud, all dressed up in their new clothes. Some had gotten an apron, some had gotten shoes, and something that was needed, that was all it took. For all who got something new to wear stayed out of that pussycat's grasp. He then gave up an awful hiss but went on his way. Whether he still exists, I do not know, but his visit would be in vain if next time everybody got something new to wear. Now you might be thinking of helping where help is needed most. Perhaps you'll find some children that have nothing at all. Perhaps searching for those that live in the lightless world will give you a happy day and a merry, merry Yule.
Hmm.
And that's Icelandic, so I guess that's a literal translation as opposed to trying to get it to rhyme.
Yeah, like a poetic one.
Yeah, it's done like a free verse kind of thing in four stanzas. So, yeah.
Free verse. I'm snapping my fingers like a beatnik. It's not not trans. Can't hear it. That's interesting.
What other scary things do we have besides Krampus in the holidays around Christmas?
Bills from the in January. Oh wait, no.
There's Belschnickel. Belschnickel is a main character from southwestern Germany or German lore who traveled to the United States and survives in Pennsylvania Dutch customs. He comes to children sometime before Christmas wearing tattered old clothing and a raggy fur. Belschnickel carries a switch to frighten children and candy to reward them for good behavior. In modern visits, the switch is only used for noise and to warn children that they have time to be good before Christmas. Then all the children get candy, and if they are polite, they're polite about it in the way that they've been told. The name Belschnickel is of the German Belsten, meaning to wallop, and Nickel for St. Nicholas. Aha. Uh-huh. And he appeared on, apparently, an episode of The Office. Because they're just showing a picture of Belschnickel on this article, and it's one of the characters from The Office on NBC, dressed up as Belschnickel. Let's see. So Krampus, we've talked about Frau Penchat, Belschnickel, and then there's Hans Trapp. Hans Trapp is another anti-Santa who hands out punishment to bad children in the Alsace and Lorraine regions of France. The legend says that Trapp was a real man, a rich, greedy, and evil man who worshipped Satan and was excommunicated from the Catholic Church. He was exiled...
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, I hate it too. He was exiled into the forest where he preyed upon children disguised as a scarecrow with a straw jutting out from his clothing. He was about to eat one boy he captured when he was struck by lightning and killed, a punishment of his own from God. Still, he visits young children before Christmas dressed as a scarecrow to scare them into good behavior. Oh, that is creepier than Krampus.
Well, now, what about, like, say, Japan? Do they have Santa Claus and Krampus, but, you know, under different names in Japan?
No, because Christianity has only been around for a few hundred years over there. And also, Santa is a big commercial commodity. Because, remember, most of the people who are in Japan are Buddhist.
Okay. So
Saint Nick is Catholic.
Do they have any kind of celebration?
From Western communication, basically. Relationships.
So they don't have any kind of celebrations in this time of year?
Not traditionally. They're big celebrations at New Year's, which is called Oshogatsu. And they'll close down the entire country for 3 days, January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And everyone will go to the local Shinto shrine and Buddhist temple to do various traditional activities to bring in the new year and bring in good luck. And it depends on which region you are in. But you'll see Santa when you go over there, and you'll see Christmas trees. But they don't carry the same, especially with the Christmas tree, the same religious context that we have in Western communities. But they look pretty. They'll light up entire public parks with light displays, and people will dress up as Santa, but it's not the same context as what we would think of Santa.
Well, like we have the traditions, I guess, with Krampus. I guess then they have to tell their kids be good, or that big dinosaur will come and eat them.
Well, they have their own ghost stories, and those are the obake that I've talked about before. But those are almost year-round, but if they really get spoken about, is in August, which is during the hottest time of the year, and around Obon, which is in either July or August, which is kind of the... I don't want to call it an autumn festival like Chuseok in South Korea, but it's similar in that it's you go and honor your ancestors by washing the headstones and taking care of the grave sites during that time. And so you'll still get stories about boogeymen at that time too, but it's not specifically at Christmas like what we have on the Western culture area, I guess. Yeah. So let's see. Okay. So there's a French legend of Pierre Fourard, whose name translates to Father Whipper. Oh dear. Begins with an evil butcher who carved children to eat. Yum. He or his wife lured three boys into his butcher shop where he killed, chopped, and salted them. St. Nicholas came to the rescue, resurrected the boys, I hope he put them back together, and took custody of the butcher. The captive butcher became Pierre Fourard, St. Nicholas's servant, whose job is to dispense punishment to bad children on St. Nicholas Day. Holy crap, another one that's scarier than actually Krampus. Just a heap for Jeff.
Well, I have no problem with scary stuff. I mean, yeah. I was trying to find, I came across a site that had all these different videos of, you know, top 10 lists of scary stuff. And they had Krampus, which was okay. One of which I think I posted on the Paranormal View Facebook page. But they had other stuff like ghost stories at Christmas and imaginary children. Friends that were probably more than imaginary. And I thought it was okay, but the way it was presented was a little odd. So I was like, I don't think I'll post these. But they were nice and creepy still.
Yeah, what freaks me out about these stories in particular, though, is because they could have come from legitimate, like, pedophiles and serial killers. Krampus didn't come from that! There was a Spanish serial killer that is also a boogeyman, and I can't remember what his name is, but it translates to the Fat Stealer. And it was an actual serial killer that they nicknamed. He killed people around, I think, 1850. And he gets treated a lot like Krampus, like the boogeyman type thing. If you're a bad child, the fat sucker is going to come get you and kill you.
That was a killer on the X-Files.
Really?
Yeah, there was a character who would entice plus-size women or more because he essentially consumed their fat to survive.
Huh. Yeah. Apparently that was a real person in Spain.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see. The next one is one that I know is controversial, actually. And it's Black Peter, who is Santa's helper in the Netherlands. Although not a monster as we think of him, he fits in with a character who will punish you at Christmas time if you're not good. Sinterklaas arrives on the eve of St. Nicholas Day in a steamship with his slave, Black Pete, portrayed in blackface in public processions in several cities. Yeah, that's...
That'll go over really well. Yeah.
Oh, that... And since about 1850, children who don't behave during the year were told that Black Peter may come and take them back to Spain, where Sinterklaas lives. How this constitutes as punishment is not quite clear. And then it goes on to say, the racist aspects of the custom have been downplayed in recent decades, and the tale of Black Peter now describes him as a chimney sweep instead of a slave, which explains the blackface. But charges of racism still follow Black Peter, and he's often portrayed with an afro or exaggerated features. Now, I remember last year at Christmas, the Netherlands were, there were groups in the Netherlands trying to get the character to be a different color. They were painting people blue and yellow and green and red and purple and trying to just make them more of a kind of an elf and get away from more of those racial aspects that they, I don't know why they decided to do this in the first place, but.
Well, that's what they did with the original Oompa Loompas, because in the book they were like little, you know, regular looking pygmies.
Oh.
Regular-looking pygmies?
In that, well, if you've seen these National Geographics where they show the pygmy people, they look like they look like children, but they're adults, but they happen to be black. And, you know, so I guess they were too freaked out, like, we can't have little people, you know, who are, you know, going to be looked at as slaves or worse or however they thought. So they went with the weird color scheme with the conflicting colors.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the situation of Mr. Popo from Dragon Ball Z, bringing in my anime nerddom back to the topic. So in the original manga, the comic book, and the anime in Japan, he is a black man. But when they brought him over to America, the people who adapted the anime went, wait, we can't have this character who is also considered a slave in this show look like that in our country. It doesn't look good, guys. And what they did, I don't know how to comment on it, but they tinted his, they colored, recolored all of the cells in the animation, so he is bright laser blue. So he looks like a walking blueberry. But wow. It feels kind of like the same thing with Pete back in, not Norway.
So they essentially rotoscoped the colors to...
Yeah, they rotoscoped it. Yeah. Thank you. You have such eloquent ways of saying that. Where did they go? Anyway, there was one more. Where did he go? There's my list. And this was just creepy. There's the Yule Lads, which are Icelandic trolls. So sorry, there were two more. In ancient times, they stole things and caused trouble around Christmas time. So they were used to scare children into behaving, like the Yule Cat. However, in the 20th century, culture creep brought tales of the benevolent Norwegian figure called Santa Claus, who brought gifts to good children. He was the carrot while the Yule lads were the stick. Their traditions became mingled until the formerly devilish Yule lads became kind enough to leave gifts in the shoes of children that they would leave out. If they are good boys and girls, the gift giving used to last for 13 straight days. That's because there are 13 Yule lads and they each have a name and distinct personality. However, they did have a mother who's called Grýla, and she predates the Yule lads in Icelandic legend and as an ogress who kidnaps, cooks, and eats children who don't obey their parents. She only became associated with Christmas in the 17th century when she was assigned to be the mother of the Yule lads. According to legend, Grýla had 3 different husbands and 72 children, all of whom caused trouble ranging from harmless mischief to murder. As the household wasn't crowded enough, the Yule cat also lived with Grýla. The ogress is so much of a troublemaker that The Onion blamed her for the 2010 eruption of the volcano in Iceland.
Nice.
Yeah. But the picture of her that they use, it looks like a painting, and it's of a woman eating a child. And I'm like, oh, that's something.
Well, it's not the first story that's had that.
No, that's true. It's very Roman.
And grim. Grim Brothers.
Big grim. Yeah, that's true. So, those are just 9 of the strange characters that we have around Yule time. And I remember a few weeks back, I'm going to say, it must have been September, we were talking about why British culture tends to highlight ghost stories at Christmas time instead of at Halloween.
Okay. Barbara said that we have listeners in the USA, UK, Canada, and Australia tonight.
Cool.
And we have some of them here in the chat room.
Yay!
Aussie Jeff.
Well, Aussie Jeff. Jeff yeah. Dean was a nice guy.
Yep.
So. Yeah.
And Tabby mentions the Nordic Icelandic gnomes and troll legends were the basis for the Dark Elves in the Thor film. There was a movie made up in either Norway or the Scandinavia areas called Troll, which is a brilliant movie done sort of as a found footage film. It's a fantasy. It's so well done. It's not it's more of a fantasy than a horror film. So Kat, really, you would be able to handle this.
Okay.
But the CG in it is flawless. And it's about a group of people whose job is to make sure people don't know trolls exist. And they keep them either, at bay, or if they have to, take them out, they do. But at one point, he has to deal with a bridge troll. So he dolls himself up almost in a suit of armor. And so the troll can't bite him.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah, that's along the lines. Oh, a nice little Christmassy film called Rare Exports. If anybody's ever not seen it, you should. It is it's a feature film based on a series of shorts that are on YouTube, which I'll put the links in to the report page. And it's about a group of men who hunt and capture free-range Father Christmases.
Father Christmases?
I haven't actually watched it, but I know of it.
Yeah, and it's done so well because it looks like they're, going to be hunting caribou or elk or something. And then they're just hunting this, little fat guy running around naked. And they capture him and they tranquilize him and they train him to become like a mall store Santa. And they sell them as rare exports. And in the film, they go another route. And an excavation team is trying to find the real Santa Claus. And literally, they don't actually say it, but it's more Krampus than Santa Claus. When they realize, wait, this is a darker version of Santa Claus. And they have all these little Father Christmases, which are essentially his helpers. And at the end, when they're able to handle the dilemma itself, they take all the other free-range Santa's little helpers they found and train them into becoming the Father Christmases and mail them out. It's very funny, but it's got some suspense. It's a family film. It's a kid as the lead. So, again, not scary enough for you, Cat, but you'll enjoy it. It's more of a romp than a horror film, but it's got suspenseful moments.
Huh. Now, you do realize that Krampus, they made him into this thing, but in real life, Krampus is really Bigfoot.
There was actually, I did find a CryptoMundo sub article about Krampus, and then people supposing that maybe, since so many of these stories are similar, of like an old man in the woods, that it is an alpine yeti.
Ooh. An alpine yeti.
An alpine yeti or an alpine Bigfoot. And I was like, that is actually a really interesting take on Krampus that I hadn't read anywhere else, but the thought had gone through my mind at one point.
Well, Aussie Jeff indicates Krampus sounds a little like the Jersey Devil, although the Jersey Devil is doesn't really have any humanity to him. He's got the face of a horse. He doesn't. He's not a satyr or a faun, and he can fly. He's got huge leathery wings. Krampus, at least in the feature film that's just come out, is can leap because mm-hmm. of the legs of the goat, but he's not a flyer per se.
Sounds more, right. Sounds to me more like Mothman.
Again, well, Mothman had wings.
Yeah, Mothman sounds more like the Jersey Devil than like.
Who knows? Could be Krampus, you know.
We could be dealing with like two variations of the same species.
Could be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Offshoots. Yeah.
Yeah, offshoots. Yeah. But maybe. It's an interesting theory. Kind of like, speaking of the Jersey Devil, did you guys see that YouTube video from a little bit earlier than this year of the Jersey Devil caught on tape that looks like a stuffed animal?
It looks like a stuffed animal?
No. It looks like somebody stuffed a goat and threw it on a wire and tried to wire it through trees.
I tell you, who could tell you about the Jersey Devil, and that's Pat, Ghost Soldier Pat.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, he's went looking for the Jersey Devil.
Ooh.
With the Jersey Devil hunters, of which I have friends?
No, but him and Doug, they go out all the time.
Oh, that's right. We discussed the fact that the Pine Barrens look like a blasted heath,
yep.
As it were. It looks, if you ever needed to film in a post-apocalyptic movie, the Pine Barrens are brilliant because they've got the white sand and these blackened trees that look like they've just been burned out. And they may have been at some point, but it's like they never fell down. Hmm. So they just it looks really creepy.
Hmm.
Oh, and by the way, Kat, and I know you'll never see it, you're aware there is an actual horror film coming out based on the Suicide Forest in Japan.
I'm not surprised. Is it Japanese or is it an American?
It's an American film, but it's about you watch Game of Thrones and all that, right? Can't remember the actress's name. She played Anne Boleyn in the Tudors. She's the girl who was just about to marry Joffrey.
Oh, Dormer.
Yeah, Dormer.
Natalie Dormer.
Right. She plays one of two twins, and her twin goes she learns that her twin has gone to the forest. She goes to look for her, and of course things go pretty much Blair Witchy on stuff, and it looks like it'll be nice and scary. I will have no problem with it. You probably.
No. And I've been to a suicide forest. And I've used one of those bathrooms. And that was the true horror. Well, there's no drinking water or usable water up on Mount Fuji. It has to be brought in these huge trucks. So they're extremely picky about water usage up on Mount Fuji. And that makes using a restroom very Much like using a tiny toilet in the air on a turbine.
So why is there no water up there?
Because it's a volcano.
Yeah. It's a volcano.
Oh, I thought there was snow on Mount Fuji.
There is, but there's not enough of it to for all the tourists that would need to use the restroom.
Oh, I mean, it doesn't run. It doesn't have any runoff or to be potable water or anything.
Not enough. Let me just say that it's just not enough, and probably once you get higher up. Plus, where I was on the station in the middle of the volcano. Well, not in the middle, but on the middle of the route up the volcano, and so the snow wasn't all the way down that way. It was right at the tree line where the trees stopped naturally growing. So, but there was no snow that far down. And it's climbers are actually only allowed on Mount Fuji to the summit 2 to 3 months out of the year. And that is when the snow has melted off the top. So,
well, that I can understand. But yeah, I guess they don't figure people actually climb Everest.
True. But they only freeze on Everest. I actually can't answer that one for you up the entire route because I don't know what facilities are up there. But up to the middle station, I can tell you that they do have to bring it up in these huge water trucks, and they're very picky about how you use it.
Yeah.
There's all hand sanitizer. You don't actually wash your hands. You just use the hand sanitizer instead. Yeah. So, yeah. And then it's all Joy John's.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now Pat said.
But anyway, it has absolutely nothing to do with Krampus.
Pat said driving in the Pine Barrens in June in the summer, it's only 32 degrees. That's kind of cold. You wonder why.
32?
That's what he said.
That sounds pleasant. But anyway, let's see. I do have one more article about Krampus, and it's not so much about the beast, but about how he became cool. And it's not very... Oh, okay, it is pretty long, but it should fill up the rest of our time easily. It's from National Geographic, and it says, "How Krampus the Christmas Devil Became Cool. We spoke to the man who says he helped make the demon-like beast popular in the United States." And this was posted yesterday on the National Geographic website. It's by Becky Little. And she writes, "If you haven't heard of Krampus, the demon-like half-goat of Austrian folklore, then you haven't been paying attention. The scary counterpart of St. Nicholas, Krampus, punishes naughty children by beating them or dragging them to his lair or even hell, has already been already appeared on the Colbert Report, started his own comic book, inspired parties, parades, around the United States. This Friday, he appears in his first feature film, though he's already appeared in multiple low-budget movies." And it links to the Krampus movie that Jeff saw. "Why all of the sudden attention in the country where he's never been widely recognized? Art director, graphic designer, and big man on Krampus, Monty Bauchamp, thinks that he deserves a lot of the credit. After the collector introduced him to Krampus postcards from the 19th and 20th centuries, Bauchamp published some in two issues of his magazine Blab and followed that with two books on Krampus cards in 2004 and 2010. Soon after his book came out, Bauchamp got a call from a gallery director in Santa Monica, California, who wanted to coordinate an exhibit of artistic interpretations of Krampus cards. The show was a great success, and that he invited me to start curating the Krampus shows," he says. Around the same time, Bauchamp, a friend, organized a theatrical Krampus club in L.A. From there, it just kind of started snowballing, he says. Since then, Bauchamp has been contacted by the show Supernatural, the people behind Anthony Bourdain's A Krampus Carol, and others who are interested in licensing the Krampus images in his books.
Uh-oh.
Whoa, I thought I fell off.
What?
All of us. Suddenly, everything went absolute dead silence. Dead. I thought, uh-oh, I fell off. And now the sound's back.
No, I muted myself because I had to cough.
Oh, is that what it was?
And I thought no one else wanted to hear that.
Oh.
Because I'm still getting over a cold.
Oh.
Yeah. So which side are you getting this one from?
This is National Geographic and Krampus movie, Christmas, Demon, Santa, Holiday Folklore is the keywords you can find it under. But I will post it in our chat room. Maybe. Not. Come on, short keys.
No, I found it.
Okay.
Here, I'll put that into the chat room while you continue reading.
Yeah, thank you. So then it goes, Grossfilm Krampus. Krampus isn't the only menacing counterpart of St. Nicholas. Although parts of Germany celebrate Krampus, other Germanic regions have Verschnickel and Nittrumpfspart, Francis Hans Tramp and Pierre Fauthard, which we talked about earlier, and the Netherlands has the controversial Zwarte Piet or Black Peter, which involves blackface. Thank you, National Geographic. These figures date back to pagan celebrations of December 22nd, the longest night of the year, that were later adopted for Christmas. Together, the Krampus-like figures and the Bishop St. Nicholas, a more austere version of the American Santa Claus, as a kind of judgment day for children, where the punishments for being naughty were much more severe than the lump of coal. Krampus, after 1890, when the Austrian government relinquished control over the nation's postcard production, caused the industry to flourish. Between then and World War One, German companies sold Krampus cards and Krampus Christmas cards in Germany, Austria, and other countries, often with slogans like Gross von Krampus, Greetings from Krampus, and Brauch sein, Be Good. The cards for kids featured images of scary Krampus frightening children, beating them, or taking them away, usually in a pouch or on his back. Often these children were screaming or crying. Baucham says that as early as 1903 or 1904, adult cards also began to appear, although some showed Krampus punishing adults, others portrayed Krampus as a silly figure carrying a woman away or even as a romantic suitor. These adult cards seemed to portray Krampus as kitsch or ironic long before Americans held their first Krampus bar crawls. But Brochev thinks that manufacturing Krampus cards for children and adults was likely just a way for companies to sell more of them. Bottom line is, postcards in Germany were a huge market, he says. I think this is why they started doing scenarios with women. Yeah. And let's see. The last portion of the article says, the evolution of Christmas. In Austria and parts of Germany, people still dress up as Krampus to scare children on Krampusnacht, or Krampus Night, traditionally held on December 5th, which is tonight, as they did in the 19th century. But Krampuslauf, or Krampus runs, in which men get drunk and run through the streets in frightening costumes, is obviously mainly for grown-ups. In the U.S., most celebrations of Krampus are also kind of like drunken dress-up days for adults, which, ironically, are more similar to an older type of American Christmas before the holiday became more focused on kids and presents for kids.
Or more like Halloween.
Yeah, which is, for most people before the 1800s, Christmas was not a domestic quiet holiday, says Stephen Nesselbaum, author of the Pulitzer Prize-nominated Battle for Christmas. It was a holiday that was characterized by boisterous rivalry. It was sort of like a combination of Halloween and New Year's Eve and Mardi Gras. These early celebrations often included costume mummers who went from door to door demanding alcohol and threatened to make trouble if they didn't get it.
That sounds like any night in Germany. Oh,
yeah. Kids today participate in a watered-down version when they go trick-or-treating on Halloween. How the different holidays sort of cross over, I think that's very interesting feature, says Matthew Schulitz, webmaster of Krampus.com. I've always pitched Krampusnacht as a sort of cross between Halloween and Christmas. As a celebration of Christmas's change, it's not hard to imagine as a day when Krampus will be too trendy and widely accepted to interest the cool crowd. After all, he's got his own movie, and he may have already peaked. Ouch.
He'll still be cool for a while.
Yeah, I think so, especially with that cool sweater that I saw earlier.
Oh, where did you see a Krampus sweater? Like an ugly sweater? Krampus sweater?
Yeah, it was made to look like an ugly, ironic, ugly holiday sweater.
Right. Because ugly sweaters are cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This one I love, and I want to know where he got it. Jeff Belanger posted it on Facebook earlier today. And I have lost my voice. Yay!
Well, at least it's at a good time, you might say.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone behind could hear Wheatley just shake it just a second ago.
Oh, that's okay.
Yes. So we have 4 minutes left.
Yes, close to 4 minutes. Mine says five, but that's okay. 4 minutes is good. So we got any other questions from the chat room? Anybody wanted to say anything? You got us 1 minute to ask us.
Well, I got it. Go to my, oh, it's got 4 minutes. Oh, you're, well, show related. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my, I think Twitter is blowing up with Krampus photos right now. Mufi mentioned that it's fun to watch the German Krampus parades on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of YouTube photo videos of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I will say tonight, just in my neighborhood, I've heard a whole lot more people going bar to bar, just bar crawling. And I wonder if it's because of some special event tonight.
Okay. We're down to about 4 minutes, and we might even drop off a minute early or something like that. Unfortunately, we had sound issues. I want to thank Sarge for helping us out by getting us on. And at least letting us get an hour's worth of show anyway. Sorry that CC had sound problems after that. Krampus just tried to throw wrenches into everything tonight. So I will be working on getting everything redone. So hopefully everything will work great.
And you take it to a store and you say, I have a virus. He says, oh, what happened? My computer put in Windows 10, yeah. And that's about as viral as it can get.
That's about it. So we're down to about 3 minutes. Jeff, you can give our stuff out, but you don't have to really hurry real fast.
Then you can go to my website at jeffgould.net, jeffgould.net/2011pnv.htm. That's my Paranormal View Hub page, where you can see previous shows and go to report pages. If you go to tonight's report page, you'll see all the Krampus links, the videos to the rare exports that became the feature film, and of course the link to get the feature film. And you can follow follow us on Facebook or community, not magazine. Just like us. You can go to my website. I'm on Twitter at Real Badger, RealBadger, like little furry critter. And there you go. And, of course, our own cat here admins our Twitter page.
Yes, and you can find the Paranormal View on Twitter at Paraview Radio. And you can also find my stuff at Jinxed Comic on Twitter, jinxedcomic.tumblr.com and jinxedcomic.com. And actually, Krampus makes an appearance in Jinxed. He shows up in our last page, which was yesterday. I should say our latest page. It wasn't the last one. So, yeah, that was a special request from Sherry in our chat room. She's like, hey, can you put Krampus into the page? I'm like, sure, let's do that.
All right. Well, again, I want to thank everybody for your patience and hanging in there with us. At least we got some of the show done tonight. And sorry that Kat... Or not Cat, but CC wasn't able to be on with us. With that, next week, come back again, join us. Hopefully I will have all the issues ironed out, and we will have a great show next week. So with that, this is Henry Foister.
Jeffrey Gould.
And Cat Cloco.
And Barbara Duncan. Of course, I don't sound like Barbara, but I'll sign off for her anyway.
So, just make a small little twang.
We'll see y'all next week. So good night, everybody. Sarge is going to take us out. Want to thank you.